welcome to SciLax, the podcast where we talk about scientific developments and technological changes in Luxembourg. And in today's show, we come back to the interview format, and we are going to talk to Aida Horanyi Dibanez. I will tell you a little bit more about her in the interview per se, but I can tell you it's going to be obviously very interesting, and we are going to focus a lot on data, data analysis, data visualization, and in general research related to that at the University of Luxembourg. Hello and welcome to SciLax. Our today's guest is Aida Horanyi Dibanez, who is a data scientist, data specialist, data everything, and also doctoral researcher at C2DH at the University of Luxembourg. Thank you for coming.
Hi, Hannah. It's my pleasure.
As usual, you first have to set the scene and discuss it a little bit so our listeners know what you specialize in. So I would like to start with data as such. When somebody asks you, what is data? What do you say? What is it for you?
So I think like there is always like the semi-formal definition. It's something about like collecting information from observation and experiments. But honestly, for me, data is everything around us. That's what data is, everything that you see.
Living is all about collecting data, because whatever you see, you can actually use later on for some kind of analysis.
Exactly. It's about generating and collecting data.
But then again, if you look at data from a more computer scientist point of view, you have to, at certain moment, turn it into some numbers or not.
Yeah, so if you look at it from the computer scientist point of view, the only thing that we are doing is to process it in a way that is useful afterwards for automation. So we will collect it in a structured way, we normalize it, and most likely save it in tables or a similar format.
So when you want to analyze data for certain projects, what do you start with? Are you the one collecting the data, or do you just look for data sets online, or what's the process? I already know that at least for data scientists and analysts, the biggest problem is the data itself and actually sorting it out and making it somehow user-friendly and usable later on.
Yes, cleaning data. I guess that's what you are talking about. So, I mean, it depends on the project and what you want to do, but like most of the time you start checking what data is available, hoping that there is plenty of data that is perfect for your research or your business questions and that is clean and ready to analyze. That's never the case. So then you spend a lot of time checking if the data is valid. That means, is there any missing data? Can I fill in the missing values anyhow that is meaningful for my analysis? Is it in the right format? Do I have all the information I need? And that's all the data cleaning that we work a lot on. I would say this is like what we spend most of our time working on. Yeah, and then once the data is clean and ready for the analysis, you can start working on your descriptive analytics or your statistical questions.
Clean data, as I understood it, is the data that has no missing values, but also the data that doesn't have outliers, right?
So about cleaning data also includes like things like, for example, you get date values and sometimes it's a text, sometimes it's a day, month, year, sometimes it's missing, and so on. Or like if you have, for example, you work with text very often, you have all kinds of variations in the text that you cannot really work with, for example, if you are doing text analysis. So you need to first put it in a format that you can work with. About the outliers, it really depends what you are looking for, because in some cases, what you are looking at is the outliers. So it's not always about getting rid of the outliers. You need to really look at them in detail and see what you want to do and if they are relevant or not.
Okay. And just for our listeners, an outlier is actually...
Yeah, so an outlier is a value that is different than the rest. So it's like in the distribution will be an extreme value. That I'm seeing how to explain this in an easy way, but it's like just something that is quite different from the rest of the values.
I always try to imagine it as, you know, very simply, I don't know, you have some graph and these are the dots, let's say, that are just completely out of the whole collection of dots.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Okay, good. So I got it. Hooray. Yes. All right. So
you've prepared the data, you've worked 5 years, you cleaned it, you have it. And then, of course, I mean, for that, obviously, you're using Excel, right? That's what we do in data analysis and visualization. There's nothing else there.
It depends on how much data you have. So, yeah, if you have up to 1 million lights, you might use Excel. It might get really slow, depending on what you want to do. But yeah, typically you do it in a database, not in Excel. But there are all kinds of scenarios.
Of course, of course. And all kinds of different possibilities, also programming languages and all that. But before we move to this, I also want to understand, because when I was doing some research about you, I got a little bit confused. Because, of course, I'm sure during parties, you get a question, oh, hello, Aida, what do you do? So how do you define yourself? Because this is, you know, this whole field is pretty new. It keeps changing, right? You also get more interested in certain things. I know that on the website or somewhere else where I found, you say that actually you prepare your PhD in data visualization, but then you call yourself a data analyst. But there's also data science and statistics and data engineering. Tell us a little bit more if you can, because I know it's a pretty complicated subject.
Yes. So, I mean, the lines between data analysts, data scientists, data engineers, statisticians are quite blurry. It really depends on what you do, like in which domain you work, if it's a company, if it's a public organization. So this is not like the final truth. I define myself as a data analyst. So what the data analysts do is answering questions. For example, we look at a data analyst in a business context, is answering questions like which marketing campaign is doing better? Are users more engaged after a certain event? What is the projection of revenue? And so on and so forth. So to do that, the skills you need to have is to be able to collect data from different sources. So to query databases normally in SQL. Then you need to have a good statistical understanding to answer those questions like hypothesis testing, time series analysis, survival analysis, clustering, and many other methods. And then you need to be able to present what you find out. That would be the visualization part. In a business context, that's typically dashboards and reporting and so on. So I say I am a data analyst. This is like what I have worked at for many, many years. So what are the other roles, if you want to know about that? For example, a data engineer is the person that is in charge of the architecture. So it's the person that is doing the development, the optimization, and the maintenance of the data pipelines. So if we want to have data every week for a certain analysis, there is a certain volume of data, that person will be sure that the data is collected, you can query it fast enough, and it's cost efficient. So it's more about the architecture. That doesn't mean that the data analyst doesn't do any data engineering or that the data engineer doesn't do any analysis, because typically there is an overlap of these tasks. Then the famous data scientist. So I think we can say that a data scientist will be more focused on building models. It's not data analysts that are not building models, but a data scientist. So I think, like, as a rule of thumb, we can say that the data analyst is working more on ad hoc questions and doing advisory for specific topics, while a data scientist will develop a model to answer a certain question that is coming frequently so that they can make decisions automatically. So it will be integrated somehow in a pipeline.
I have a feeling a little bit that it's just this buzzword, this trendy field that is somebody designed to say, okay, I don't want to be called a statistician. And I want to say that I'm IT specialized, but there's also, I want to be a bit of a scientist. So I'm going to call myself a data scientist.
So yes, I agree. There is a bit of a buzzword, because we are still trying to find the different realities within data. The same way we generalize using the word data scientist, I believe that there are so many different roles, more than these three or four that we've discussed. It's so different when someone is working in a business context or in health or in public policy. All these people are doing very, very different things. And they are all data scientists. So it's also about the technologies we use. So even there is even more chaos within all this. And we've tried to make these standard terms. And it seems like the one that sounds better is data scientist, yes. But as I say, it's very blurry. It's different companies, they have different needs, and they will define the positions totally differently.
So you discussed this type of roles in the business context. And now I want to move on a little bit to the university context. But before we do that, I will ask you to ask a question to our listeners. So the pub quiz style question, what have you prepared for our listeners?
So my question is, what are the cheapest tools to collect and visualize data?
I have no clue. So I'm already looking forward to the end of the discussion to find out. I mean, I can have some guesses, but I won't do it now. And now coming back to university, because as I mentioned right now, you work also at the University of Luxembourg in the C2DH. Let's get a bit more scientific here. You are actually studying data visualization, right? And what are you doing there? What's your specialization there?
Yes, so data visualization is another field within data. So you will also have data visualization developers and data visualization specialists. And this is also a big, big field. What I am doing right now is I am working with I am studying different approaches to data visualization. So the data visualization we are very used to is the statistical graphics. So bar charts, line charts, and so on. But this is only a very small part of the options that we have to visualize data. It doesn't serve necessarily all the disciplines. So for example, I now work in the field of humanities, and humanists, they look at data a bit differently. So they are more interested on analyzing the complexity and looking at the granularity and exploring the visualizations in an interpretative way. And for that, we need to have different tools that are not necessarily existing right now. So that's the focus of my research in visualization. And I am doing it in the context of the LuxTime project, that is an interdisciplinary project funded by the Institute for Advanced Studies, where we work together with the LCSB and the LIST. And in the project, we are collecting data sources from the fields of history, ecohydrology, and environmental cheminformatics about the industrial history of the MINET region. So what we are doing is trying to understand the impact on the population of the different events in this region. And for that, we are trying to combine sources from historical archives together with sampling campaigns and other scientific data. And then we will work on the visualization of the data. So we are going to use the visualization as a tool for interdisciplinary understanding.
Is it possible? Where are you right now? Because this is one of the interesting things. I mean, there are those few institutes in Luxembourg trying to do interdisciplinary work, right? So it's very, I mean, fresh in the sense that we all know it's needed and we should be looking at the bigger picture and all that. But you're talking about three different fields that don't necessarily cooperate that much, right? So it's probably also very interesting as a project for your colleagues, the people working at LCSB and the people working at LIST.
Yes, it is. It's really, really interesting. So it's true that we talk a lot about the interdisciplinary projects, but we don't do it in practice so often. But this is really a good example of that exercise. So we've been now working 1 year together, and I can tell you, like, most of the effort has been in really trying to understand what each of the different disciplines can contribute to the project, because we really speak different languages. And we have those three disciplines plus myself, that it's a fourth one. And it's really interesting to see the exercise of I'm not quite sure what you mean. It's that. And there is a lot of this going on. So we worked a lot with mind maps and trying to see what are like the individual contributions, what is the joint contribution, what we are going to come up with at the end. And yes, it is possible. And it's really rewarding also, because I just learned so much. I have to say it's also scary at some points, because you are never in your comfort zone where you know exactly what you are doing. It's mostly the opposite, but it also helps you to understand your own discipline from different points of view. So yeah, I believe it's possible, and yeah, very interesting.
Great, great. When you talk about being scared, it's a bit like me when I talk to the scientists in the podcast, because of course, this is my out of my comfort zone. I can try to ask intelligent questions, but it's obviously I'm never going to be the specialist you are. So, you know, this is really rewarding, but at the same time stressful. Absolutely. So when is the final time for the project? When do you think you will have everything ready? Because you said you're 1 year in.
Yes, so it's 3 years for the moment. So at least our PhDs are 3-4 years. So I think for 2024, right?
So you still have time to understand.
Yes.
And is it enough that you're the only one trying to kind of translate between all the people there?
I'm not the one translating. Everyone is doing their own translations. I just try to figure it out for myself. But I'm sure they have the same... They go through the same process than myself when I talk about my topic.
Okay, because I understood that you as the specialist in data visualization kind of try to interpret all the discussions yourself, like you are a little bit more trying to get the bigger picture.
I think it's more like a collective effort. No, I don't feel I'm doing it myself. Just the technical development, it will be my part, but the exercise is, I think it's like something we do all together.
Coming back to the place where you are. So as you said, there's this whole idea of different data needed for different disciplines in science. How does it look to collect data in humanities? Because I remember I talked to one of your colleagues and I loved that story because C2DH is very special. I mean, we have to talk about this, that this is digital history. So there is already that idea of cooperation between, let's say, the data collector and the historian. But still, I remember I just loved the story when she said, you know, I just had this amazing idea, this project, this blog, and I went to this person who was supposed to do the website for me. And I was like, oh, so we're going to do this. And he's like, where's the data? And she's, yeah, but you know, but yes, the people said something. And he's like, yeah, okay, give me the data. She's like, okay.
Yes, I understand. Yes. In this case, as I collect the data and I kind of understand what I would ideally need, that's not exactly my issue, but I have many others that the historian wouldn't have. So as an engineer, first, I didn't know what an archive was. So first, I had to figure out that I had to find the data in archives. That was like a very, very exciting exercise for me. But as you can imagine, at the beginning, I wasn't very efficient in my visits to the archive. So basically, you need to figure out what's available. It's a physical documents. Then you need to be able to read them because sometimes they are handwritten in other languages from 200 years ago. So this is a whole new process for me. And then once you have all the sources, you need to see, okay, what I'm really going to use. And then you need to translate it into a structure, a format that you can use. And depending on what's the volume, you will have to decide if there is a way to extract it automatically or not. So this is really the challenge also for me, like the physical sources, the volume, the languages, the discovery of the archival sources, because I am not an expert at all in diving in the archives to see what's in there. So yeah, that's my learning about data collection. I think the next part will be a bit easier, I hope, because that's where I have a bit more of experience.
You had to go again out of your comfort zone for something different here. So that's interesting too. Okay, so we mentioned data visualization at the university, and now I want to move a little bit again, because there are a few other projects that you've been involved in, you've done. What I wanted to move to Viz for Social Good. Can you tell us something more about this?
Yeah, sure. So Viz for Social Good is an organization helping nonprofits to visualize their data. It's an organization where I started participating as a volunteer back in 2017 or so. And then I became Luxembourg local chapter leader, and now I am regional leader for EMEA. And what we do there is that we partner with nonprofits to launch datathons where our volunteers can participate. And basically, it's open to anyone using any visualization tools from any levels. And it's really an open project. And how it works is that we launch a project on our website. So we worked closely with the nonprofit to collect all the data that they have for the purpose that they needed, all the information, pictures, context data, and so on. And we launch a project. And then the volunteers, they have 3 to 4 weeks to visualize their data. During this period, there is also Slack channels, and they really have support to exchange with other participants or to ask the nonprofit about the specific questions. And then at the end of the project, the nonprofits, they choose the visualizations that fit their purposes best, and they use them for communication. They integrate them in their websites or for annual reports. Yeah, and then we have we usually have a closing event where the volunteers, they have the opportunity to present their work, at least a selection of the visualizations. And it's also very nice because it's an exchange with the representatives from the nonprofits. So it's really an opportunity to get together at the end of the project and assess how it went and know a bit more about the work they do and so on. We are always looking for new volunteers. I encourage anyone to participate because it's really a nice place to practice, because you get support from other people, you get plenty of inspiration from other projects. It's definitely a perfect place to get new skills for a good purpose.
I'm going to share the link to the website in the show notes. So if ever somebody is interested, of course, go. I really think it's a great idea. How do you find the associations, the charities? Do they actually write to you that they want to participate, or do you choose them yourselves, or how is the process?
Yeah, so both of them. This is open to any charity. So if there is anyone that has some data and is not quite sure about what to do with it, or would like to communicate about any specific project, or some results they are very proud of, we are always happy to have a discussion with them. Any associations in EMEA, they can reach out, and I am really happy to discuss with them. So sometimes they reach out. I worked in the past with some nonprofits in Luxembourg. We ran recently a project with Fondation Folero, and we are always looking for new nonprofits that want to run projects.
And then when it comes to the choice of the region, because as you said, you are a representative for EMEA, so do you try to get one representative from one region for one project for 1 month, and then another one from another? How does this go?
So yes, we try to balance the regions. And if you see all the projects that run over the last years, there are associations really from all over the world. I have colleagues that are working with nonprofits in other regions. So I could always put them in touch with the right person.
So I can see you're appealing to everybody. Whoever's listening, contact me. I'm going to help you out, please, both for the charities and people interested in DataViz. When we talk about the volunteers, how many volunteers per project normally? How many people try to visualize the data?
So by heart, I think we just closed a project with Build Up Nepal. And I think there were 80 submissions, if I remember well.
That's quite a lot, really. And then how do you choose? The foundation chooses, the charity chooses, right? Not you.
Yes, exactly. The nonprofit choose. It's sometimes a challenge, because there are some brilliant submissions.
Yeah, of course. I've checked some and I agreed. Some of them are really, really amazing. People do great stuff. And it's also for those of you who are listening and don't know what DataViz is about right now, please check it out. Because I think that if you are not in this field, you still are stuck in this, you know, I don't know, 3D charts with Times New Roman in there that is visualizing something. And nowadays with all the possibilities of, you know, images speaking for themselves, the possibility to hover over the interactiveness of the DataViz and all that, it's a completely different world. It's really, it's a lot of fun, I have to say, to discover also the foundations through this, the charities, but also just to see how what you can do in the field. It's great.
And I think that first, it's something that applies to any field. So it doesn't matter what you do in which field, data visualization is always something useful if you want to communicate about your work. It's really something for everyone. And I've been through this process with my own friends because like for some years they were like, yeah, but I don't do much of that. It's more like a technical or it's more administrative. And after some time, they were like, no, I realized I really need to learn to visualize data. So
they come back to you now. Help. Where do I start?
Yeah, and it's also that for people that works with data, we tend to work always with the same kind of data. And that's not so rewarding. But when you work with the data from the nonprofits, we have nonprofits working in topics related to poverty, others related to women in tech, others defending certain species of animals. So you really get to work with many different data sets. And that's a really good experience for learning.
It's interesting what you mentioned about the friends suddenly saying, oh, actually, you were right. We should know a little bit more. And it just got me inspired to move to another subject, kids, because we often talk about this that, okay, now without coding, all the children, they are 3 years old, they already need to know how to code. Okay, I'm obviously exaggerating, but you know, this is really like, it's clear to everybody, it's important. Would you agree that the next step will be to say all the people, all the children, they have to have some idea of how data works and how to analyze it, because that's going to be the future, they have to be able to do it?
Yeah, so I agree. I think all the coding development, it will come automatically without, so much effort. I can see it in my daughter every day. She's the master of computers and iPhone. I can't even understand how is that possible. But regarding the data part, I think that requires a bit of focus because we want people to understand the data, to be able to make decisions, to be critical, to be able to look at the data visualization and say, what am I actually looking at? Because we are more and more using data to communicate, but if we don't have the data literacy to really process what we are looking at, we are not going to understand what's going on. So I think, yes, it's really important to get kids to understand data and to use it and become familiar and visualize it soon. Yeah.
Okay. And that's what you did a little bit as well, right? Because you had this project that I don't know what's happening right now. It's been a while. You haven't published any more chapters. You'll say in a second. But first of all, I want to tell the listeners. So the title is My Mom is a Data Analyst. And it's a collection of stories in the beginning translated into couple of languages, then I think Spanish, if I'm not mistaken. And it just talks about you, your life through comics, let's say, maybe not you, your life, but how it looks to be a data analyst and explains in very, very simple terms different subjects related to data.
Yeah, initially it wasn't any kind of project. I was just doing this with my daughter because she was asking me all the time what you are doing. I started explaining and then I tried to structure a bit in a fun way and simplify. So we did this a bit like in our free time during the first lockdown. And then because it was 24/7, we really collected many stories. And then I said, okay, I'm just going to write them down like in actual stories. And then, my friends did a crowdfunding for my birthday to illustrate them. And then I decided that I would illustrate them representing all women that should actually be in the field of data analysis. So at the beginning, I published them in my blog and it was really nice because many people volunteered to translate them. So we had the stories in Polish, in Nepali, and that was really, really rewarding for me to see how people was enthusiastic to translate them. And what I've been doing lately, I've written a last story about the algorithms, machine learning and artificial intelligence. And I've been adding a critical thinking section to all the stories and some exercises. And I was hoping to be able to print it at some point as a collection of stories. This was an exciting project, but I totally underestimated the workload of making this happen. But still, it's something I'm still very enthusiastic about. And just also like now, for example, when I write the exercises and I give them to my daughter, and it's so nice to see her like collecting data and making little graphs. And so that was the whole point of this project. And this is where I am right now.
once you get published the next chapters, just please let me know. I'm going to definitely promote that because I think it's going to be interesting for everybody listening today and then just sharing. I'm going to test it on my kids as well, see what happens, because that's always good. You know, the same with coding and whatever else. It's yet another language we can share with our children. You mentioned machine learning. It's been 30 minutes. Finally, I got to hear also that another buzzword that is still also important for data science, data analysis, right? I thought in the beginning that's a completely different story. AI, that's robots, right? It has nothing to do with data, or does it?
Yes, I think as for the data science, I could agree there is a bit of buzzword. I will give credit to machine learning. I think that's a technical word we can keep.
More than AI, because AI, I think that's more kind of like the magic of computers, right? You put something in and you get something magical out.
Yeah, so actually machine learning is a part of artificial intelligence. So like, let's say AI is the big field and machine learning is a way of doing it, where the machines learn from the data. And then, so we have many different methods of learning, some in which we tell them, these are the cases we know already, these are the results, so please learn and predict the next cases. And other cases, we don't have the answer, so we just provide plenty of information and the algorithm learns from pattern identification or other methods. And yes, we use machine learning in data analysis, of course. It's when I said in the second step, once we have cleaned the data and we need to apply our analysis to get to answer certain questions, we use their machine learning. So for example, if we are asked to group our public according to certain features, we can use clustering methods to get a number of groups of people. And then we will...
Clustering methods? What's that? Clustering methods?
Ah, I thought clustering is kind of self-explanatory. So clustering is just grouping. That's all it is. So you are grouping according to certain characteristics. The thing is that sometimes you don't know how to group. So when you have a lot of data, you can let the algorithm decide what is the optimal way of making those groups. Or you can tell, no, I want to group people by certain features, for example.
So just to summarize, you were talking about supervised and unsupervised learning in this, right? So the idea that you are actually, you know what the result you want to get and you just suggest, okay, this is the data, learn from it, and then please try to predict. Or unsupervised, when you're actually, you're not sure what is the outcome, you want the machine to figure it out first and then somehow give you some outcomes, find some patterns.
Yes, I try to avoid the technical words, but you mentioned
them. Sorry. I just wanted to show that I understand what you're saying, obviously, but I think this is also going to be something that will be discussed sooner or later. So
yes,
it's good to know that. I think this is the moment when we can go back to the question you asked a long time ago to our listeners. First of all, can you repeat the question and then tell us the answer?
So my question was, what are the cheapest tools to collect and visualize data? And the answer is pen and paper. So I chose this question because often we have the impression that data and data visualization is something that is like computers and difficult and automatic, and it's nothing like that. So the computers are just a tool. We can collect data manually and we can visualize it with our own visual vocabularies, and that's with colored pencils. And I wanted to invite you to read, for example, DR Data, that is a project by Stephanie Posavec and Georgia Lupi, where they exchanged postcards for a year, visualizing their own lives and experiences, just using the postcards and colored pencils. So the cheapest is pen and paper.
But then if you have big data, it's not going to work. We're talking about really that data you defined in the beginning, right? The one that you see around.
Yes. You would be surprised how much small data we have. So everyone talks about big data, but very often what we have is not big data. Postcards wouldn't work for big data, but they work for many, many other things.
So again, I'm going to share the link to this book. You said it's a book, right?
Yes.
With our listeners in the show notes. And the only thing that remains is to thank you very much for today. It was a pleasure to have you as a guest. And I hope that there'll be at least a few people already trying to sign up for VIS for Social Good, or maybe studying at the University of Luxembourg and doing something similar to you, so you can one day exchange your opinions about data. Thank you very much. Our guest today was Aida Horanyi-Dibanez.
Thank you very much.
And this is it for today. I hope you enjoyed the discussion and the interview I had with Aida. If you have any questions or you want to comment on the show, remember we are very present on Twitter, on LinkedIn, also on Facebook. You can always write me an email the traditional way. And don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget there'll be more interesting interviews coming, and also some news from the research landscape of Luxembourg. My name is Hanna Siemaszko, and this was SciLux.